and this can be done by pressing star one on your telephone keypad to register your question. If your question is at any point, please press star zero and you will be connected to an operator. I'd like to call turn the call over to your host today, Mr. Roland Bukhout. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, everybody. No, it's good morning still. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our first half year 2024 call. Next to me is André Haag. Well known to you, our CFO. My name is Roland Bukhout. As was said before, and I joined the Volksbank at the end of May as CEO. I'm happy to take you through our presentation today together with André. And afterwards, obviously, we'll have time for the Q&A. In a nutshell, I think the first 6 months of the year were very successful for Volksbank, both from a commercial as well as from a financial point of view. We'll go through some slides in a moment, but as a broad overview, I think it's good to say that volume stayed on track. We grew the mortgage portfolio. We had savings inflows. We had extended credit extensions to the SME segment. So we're very happy about that. We still have the tailwind of the lower interest rate or the better interest rate environment. It's trending in a certain direction, but we'll come back to that in a moment. The costs altogether at the bottom line stayed on track, but we have several remarkable influences on it that particularly André will discuss in more detail. And at the bottom line, profit had a modest decline, but still one that we find within the boundaries, and we're satisfied with the first 6 months of the result. We will also spend a little bit of time on discussing remarks and letters that we have received from our regulator, since it's important to maintain the transparency with the regulatory agenda to you. So, if I may ask you to turn to page 5. As you know, strategic elements that we have is our customer relationship model as well as our societal responsibility. I'm happy to say that we can report on our customer relationship side an increase in the net promoter score from -1 to +5, which is quite remarkable and a proud number if you ask me, simply because we are dealing with a lot of expenses that are related to our regulatory agenda as well as investments in IT and into our data strategy. And this internally led to debates, okay, where are we going to find the funding and stay within boundaries when it comes to your view on our P&L. So we have, for example, allocated quite some budgets that we have aimed at marketing and our front office activities towards these ambitions. So what we see here, actually, is the a low dependency on the marketing budgets and the effective, the positive effects of our distribution model, meaning our face channel and our franchise model when it comes to customer interaction. So with lower marketing expenses, we're nevertheless capable of increasing our NPS in, by the way, a difficult market. So I think this is a big two thumbs up when it comes to our so-called SMS shops. Our Regio Bank franchise partners, as well as our digital channel with ANS and our B2B business in the Netherlands. So I think that is a testimony there. When it comes to the social impact, our climate neutral balance sheet increased by 1 percentage point to 76, ahead of our target. So also on that side, I think it's a very good 6 months, first 6 months of 2024. On slide 6, just a few examples of initiatives that's been taking place within the labels that we operate on. ASN Bank has a special position as a very ambitious sustainability brand in the market. Has been expanding its business for mortgages by adding 250 new financial advisors to a service provider called Huismerk, which aims to help people find finance their homes. So obviously 250 high-quality financial advisors clearly has a very positive impact on the volume you can distribute. With SNS, I want to mention a pilot that we've been going on in the Netherlands. There have been some issues when it comes to government allowances to support families for specific situations. Sometimes this is a minefield to find your way through. It's very difficult. It's a haze. And so there's a pilot going on where people can actually get support to find their way through all the regulations that apply to these allowances that can be obtained. And so they help people to solve that riddle. The Aegio Bank is oftentimes finding its way to stimulate the local communities, both business and private communities. So they organized successfully, again, another what is called National Village Summit, which is really focusing on local communities. And it attracted a lot of people to come there, do their networking, and try to help each other out. Then the business-to-business concept of BLK Wonen. They introduced a very much in line with both our commercial proposition as well as our societal proposition, in combination of what is called a besparingshypotheek, which is a mortgage that offers savings opportunities as you move along and you make your home more sustainable. We work together with a partner there that is called Sustain, that helps people to identify the actions they can take and then guarantees a certain energy label if you actually execute those actions, which then has a positive effect on the mortgage rate that clients are paying. Just a few examples to give you a little bit of flavor of the activities that are taking place underneath the brands and that give meat on the bones of our claims in the market. Then I want to spend a few words, like I said at the very beginning, things that happened and that we're less proud of, but they are part of reality. In 2023, the bank announced that it had received a warning from the DNB that a fine was being considered for imperfections in the money laundering and the financial crime area. And indeed, we have received a letter that this intention has been converted to indeed a process of imposing a fine upon us. Now this was in a such not a surprise. Like I said, we announced this one last year in 23 already. But there was a second letter that also pointed out things that we have not done well when it comes to risk management. This was a survey or an investigation by the ECB and handed over to the DNB, the Dutch Central Bank, in order to start another process for a fine. So these are not criminal fines, by the way, just to make sure we understand each other. We are in close contact with the Dutch Central Bank to go through these letters to discuss with them what happened and what is the degree of mistakes that have been made. Ultimately, a fine will come out of it that will be published by the Central Bank unless we can convince them that we didn't do anything wrong. But we see that there have been imperfections. There's no doubt about it. So we cannot say anything about it. The height of the fine, the level of the fine, which is also why you won't find it back in the provisioning in our balance sheet. Unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever way you want to look at it, IFRS does not allow us to create a provision at this stage, and we can also not indicate any level of the fines. Not the happiest news to share with you, but it is reality, and in context of transparency, we don't want to keep it for you. Keep going to page 8. Just a few key numbers. I mentioned the NPS, which is developing extremely well, and like I said, notwithstanding reduction in marketing and commercial budgets, I'm very happy with that development. Active multi-customers increased with 40,000. Which is both in our client relationship model an important figure, as well as, of course, for our P&L. As you know, multi-customers are more loyal customers, are more profitable customers because they take more services off our hands. So it's very important. The climate neutral balance sheet I mentioned to you, maybe on the bottom line, Andre will further elaborate on these figures, but we see a healthy ROE. Very important, of course, for any bank. The two main fundamentals that we're building on our capital ratio and our leverage ratio, as well as our liquidity ratio, which is not in here as such, but all are in very solid areas. So that gives us a lot of room to maneuver. The commercial growth, I mentioned again, we did very well. We were pleased with the results over the first 6 months, 3 billion in production when it comes to mortgages, which is a big number for our bank. You see also, it's not on the slide, but that means that we have a half percentage point improvement of market share. And in the right-hand side, it may seem like a small number, but it's an important segment for us, both in fulfilling our societal role that we want to do in fostering or offering help for small businesses to develop their business proposition, as well as diversifying our business model away from just savings and mortgages. So we're happy with the 83 million that we have been able to extend an additional mortgages. On page 10, an additional lending in the SME segment. On page 10, the market share of mortgages I mentioned to you before. In retail savings, we see a small decline, which was by design, because we had in the first 6 months of the year also an effort to discourage mono customers on savings to stay with us. Why is that? Because they only are their price hoppers. They are very sensitive to savings rates being offered. So they park their savings money here and then move it to another place when it becomes more attractive. It's hard to do deepen the relationship and be making multi-product customers, and therefore we have been discouraging them. So this is by design. At the same time, we see an inflow of 1.5 billion, which is a proud number for the first 6 months of the year, and obviously very important model figure supporting our business model. On page 11, the multi-customers, the plus 40,000 I mentioned already to you. On the right-hand side, the increase in fee income. Another effort to make the dependency on interest rates less severe. It's going very well. We're very happy with it. At the same time, we shouldn't fool ourselves. Our NIM dependence is our NIM dependence, and it's close to the core of our business, and that's what we do well. So NIM will always stay very important to us, but we'll use any opportunity that we have to diversify our model. And therefore, the increase in fee income for us is meaningful. That's as far as I would like to go before I pass on to Andre. Once again, I think commercially and financially successful 6 months. Challenges are there. The cost level I spoke about briefly, supported by incidentals. So Andre will get back to that. So it's something that we need to continue to pay attention to. And yes, we have challenges on the regulatory agenda and the things that come in our direction. We are aware. And that also means that we have to take a closer look at our business model and our business processes, simplify and make sure that we can deliver our services in an effective manner with a good model that shows impact on what we're doing. So this will be on the agenda for the second quarter. I've been too short in the company to be able to give you concrete information about this yet. This is an in-depth and heated discussion that we're having, heated in a positive sense, in the engagement of all the members in the board, and we will continue to do so. We do feel a sense of urgency because the regulatory issues are there and the market is there. You know that our shareholder has expressed a certain wish for us to move forward, and we try to move in that direction also, building an attractive bank so we can meet the expectations of the what is called the NLFI in the Netherlands. Well, we can talk about that later if there's any questions to that. For now, I'd like to hand over to Andre.
Thank you very much, Roland. Good morning, everyone, and also a warm welcome from my side. Let me continue with our financial results for the first half of 2024, starting in our presentation on page 13. This shows an extract of our profit and loss accounts. But before we are going to dive deeper into these numbers, let's have a short view at the economic environment in which we are embedded as a bank. In the first half of this year, the global economy has proven resilient, and the economic outlook for the whole year 2024 turned more positive, with major economies avoided a severe downturn and inflation improved without increasing unemployment. However, given ongoing geopolitical tensions, the economic outlook is only cautiously optimistic. Besides that, the European Central Bank took a first step to lower three key interest rates by 25 basis points. Additional rate cuts are expected later this year and also potentially next year. Against this background, the Volksbank had a good start to 2024 with a strong commercial and financial result. For the first half this year, we achieved a net result of 231 million, which is around 17 million below previous year. If you look at the underlying components, we report a total income of 661 million, which is around 10% below previous year, in the context of a changing interest rate environment. This was partially offset by total operating expenses of 371 million, which is an improvement of roughly 5% compared to the previous year. In addition, our net result was positively impacted by an impairment reversal of 38 million. As we had a release of impairments of 30 million in the first half of this year, while we did a build-up of impairments by 8 million in the first half of last year. This overall formed a strong financial result for the first half of this year, which is also positively impacting the bank's profitability. And this is also displayed in our return on equity table, which you see in the middle. There's a time series with the comparison for previous year, and at the end of June this year, we report an ROE of 11.5%. I suggest that we are now diving a bit deeper into our financials by looking at underlying trends and drivers on the following pages. So now moving on to page 14. Page 14 shows the development of our total income. For the first half of this year, we reported total income of 661 million, which is 74 million below previous year. If you look at the underlying drivers, it is primarily driven by our net interest income. So if you look at the result line there, we report 564 million, which is around 98 million below previous year. The underlying driver for this decline year over year is mainly related towards a lower contribution of our treasury ALCO result, which already anticipates a changing interest rate environment, which is also visible in markets there. Besides that, there's also visible that there's lower contribution of our retail savings deposits, which are repricing year over year, and also the pass-through rate attached to that on top of customers has changed year over year. There's another third component that is also driving our net interest income, where we see a shift from the interest line towards the other result on financial instruments line. I will explain that also in a second. Besides that, our total income was positively impacted by net fee and commission income, which improved by 3 million to over 36 million in the first half of this year. Mainly because of what Roland also mentioned earlier, we had the opportunity to onboard new customers, roughly 40,000 in the first half of this year, which also now contribute with their basic banking fee towards our commission result. In addition, our other result on financial instruments improved by 21 million to over 65 million. And within this P&L line, we mainly report also our hedging instruments that we use for money market purposes. And that is what I said earlier, there's a shift between the net interest income line and the other result on financial instruments. Why is that the case? We have, for money market purposes, also deposits in non-euro currency, where the interest coupon, of course, is reported in the net interest income line. However, we hedge these instruments from non-European currency back to euro with plain FX swaps, but under IFRS, so accounting law, it has to be presented in the other result on financial instruments. And that is called accounting asymmetry, and explains also why the net interest income line year over year is declining to a certain extent. Having said this, let me also have a look with you at the net interest margin. That's the table in the middle. You see the bar chart with the time series year over year. So if you look there at the first half of last year, that was roughly the peak of interest hikes by the European Central Bank. So it was more than 200 basis points in 1.5 to 2 years, actually. And you see also that our net interest margin correlates with that. So our peak of our margin was last year with 182 basis points. And then you saw that the interest environment started to change with the first set of the ECB. Further steps are expected by the markets, and pricing is already changing. And that's also what you see now in our decline of our net interest margin, which went down to 158 basis points by end of June. You can also say it's leveling out. It is normalizing actually year over year further. Having said this, I move on to page 15. This page shows the development of our total operating expenses. For the first half of this year, we report total operating expenses of 371 million, which is an improvement of 80 million compared with previous year. If you look at the underlying drivers, there are two main buckets that drive our cost base, staff cost and other operating expenses. If you look at the first bucket, staff cost, they increased by 19 million year over year to 253 million, mainly because of existing CRO agreements in the Netherlands, which stepped up now the third year in a row and is causing wage inflation. This is pressuring our structural cost base and require cost mitigation in other buckets of the company. At the same time, you see also that total FTEs slightly declined year over year. So that was not the driver for the increase of the cost. It's really related to the CRO itself. The second cost bucket that is driving our operating expenses is related to other operating expenses, which improved by 27 million to over 128 million. And there are a lot of drivers in the background. That's the main two positive ones to mention that improved year over year is actually on the one hand, we have 60 million lower regulatory levies, mainly because of the contribution towards the build of the Single Resolution Fund, so SRS. So over the last years, we all were invited in the banking industry, including the Volksbank, to contribute. That was also done last year. And then also last year, the regulator concluded that the target level of the Single Resolution Fund is now achieved, built up. So there was not further invites in the first half of this year to contribute to SRS, which allowed us lowering our regulatory spend in our P&L, and that drives the 16 million mainly in the first half of this year. There's a second item to mention that also improved our cost base. It's again also 16 million. It's a coincidence that we have twice 16 million, but the second 16 million is related to a tax refund. It's because of a refinement of our tax returns, and there it's a one-off gain. It's not expected to recur in the second half of this year or going forward. But both items improved our cost base in this P&L line item, and were partially compensated by higher investment costs for anti-financial crime and also for improvements of our risk models. Looking now at our cost-income ratio, which is shown in the bar chart in the middle, and time series shows the development year over year. So at the end of June, we report a cost-income ratio of 56.1%, the two components, income and costs, driving this ratio. Income declined, like I said earlier, year over year, and was partially compensated by lower costs in the first half of this year. Our strategic range for our cost-income ratio for mid to long term is actually 57 to 59%. If we want to target in this range, really mid to long term, we have really changed to further simplify and optimize our business model. And that's why, like Roland earlier said, we are focusing with the whole management team and the company on simplifying our company, rationalizing our company, and streamlining our operation, which will help us going forward to realize cost synergies that allow to lower the structural cost base. Now I'm moving on to page 16. This shows the development of our impairment charges. And I'm looking at first at the upper table on the left side, which shows the breakdown of the charge for the first half of this year compared to previous year. For the first half of this year, we report actually a reversal of our impairment charges by 30 million, which is mainly related, and it's visible in the table, by residential mortgages with 28 million. Why is that the case? The expected credit loan loss provision under IFRS 9 is broken down in three stages, stage 1, 2, and 3. And the first two stages are really driven also by macroeconomic parameters and development. So if there's a change upcoming, that will request a refinement in our calculation model. And that's exactly the case that actually the economic outlook for GDP growth, but also a lower unemployment rate and higher house prices in the Netherlands were really driving in the first half of the year forecasts in our models there, which resulted in stage one and two in this release of 28 million for mortgages. The opposite actually took place last year. Last year, at the same time, there was a more pessimistic outlook for the same three parameters. Recession fears were actually much closer and ratios more less favorable, actually. And we had a build-up of 8 million overall, and then mortgages 9 million. You see there in the second column, actually, there. If you look at the bottom line, costs in total for the risk costs in total are historically very low. We report this for a couple of years in a row, which underpins the high quality in our underlying loan portfolio. Moving on to the next page, this shows the development of our regulatory ratios. Looking at first at the bar chart on the left side, this shows the development of our total capital ratio and our CET1 ratio. Both ratios are strong and resilient for the first half of this year. If you look behind the drivers itself, so CET1 capital was increasing by 128 million in the first half this year because of profit retention, which was partially and at the end overcompensated by RWA. So we employed capital. That was a conscious decision to generate additional income streams. And that's why you see actually total capital ratio and CET1 ratio slightly declining, but both ratios are well above our internal planning targets and well above regulatory minimum requirements. Looking at the middle and more, that shows our risk-weighted assets with the development year over year. By the end of this year, we recorded 16.5 billion, and in the first half of this year, we employed another billion, mainly related, what I said, to additional opportunities to employ capital for income streams in this area of exposure to financial institutions, so short-term, very liquid there, and give us more room in our P&L going forward. Besides that, we had also organic growth, like Roland said, 1.3 billion loan growth, of which 1 billion is organic. That is also driving additional RWAs year to year. Our leverage ratio is shown in the bar chart on the right side, slightly improved year to year. Main reason is that CET1 capital with profit redemption was stronger growing in the first half of the year than the growth of total assets there, but it improved slightly. Well, having said this, actually this brings me at the end of my part. Thank you very much for your attention. I hand back to you, Roland.
Thank you, Andre. Thank you very much. Brings us to the last slide of the main part of the deck, outlook. As we said, all banks have been enjoying a tailwind from the interest rate environment. This is slowly subsiding by repricing the stake rate in the market. So we'll see this also with us. Andre took us through the development of our NIM number. So this will continue also in the second half of the year, which means that we will have slight pressure, downward pressure, on our top line. At the same time, Andre elaborated on the incidental items that we see in our cost build-up. These incidental items are non-recurring, so we will not have the benefit of those because they were mostly on the positive side. At the same time, we continue to invest, like I said before, in preparing our answers for the regulatory challenges that we have. In combination with further investments in IT and our data strategy. So we will have a challenge in the cost side as well, meaning that at the bottom line, we will expect a reduction of the number. Having said that, you know, we're not going to sit on our hands. We have to do a lot of things in order to counteract on this, as well as to accelerate on the resolution of our issues with the regulatory topics. So Andre also hinted at this. We have intense discussions about what to do next, and simplifying and increasing the effectiveness of our organization is a top priority. It's, however, still a discussion, so there's nothing concrete that we can tell you about it right now, but it will remain on the agenda and is one of the ways forward to counter the effects we will see in the market on our results. With that, I would like to turn it over to the audience and see if there's any questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you have any questions, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. the star one if you wish to ask a question. Our first question today is coming from Cor Kluis, calling from ABN AMRO ODDO. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, hello. Good morning. This is Cor Kluis of ABN AMRO ODDO BHF. Thanks for the presentation. I've got a couple of questions. Maybe the first question is on the net interest income. The figures that you showed, the 15% decline of around 98 million euro year-on-year decline, is somewhat deviating from the peers that showed interest incomes the last quarter and half year. Qualitatively, you highlighted a couple of points, but could you give a little bit more figures on what the composition is of the decline? I can deviate myself. I think that of the 100 million euro decline, around 20 million is probably from this money market interest rate swap, which basically goes from NII to other income. I think that's explained 20 of the 100 million. But could you give us a little bit feeling of what the other 80 million decline is versus the first half of last year? A little bit split up there. And related to that is also the duration. Have you maybe changed your asset duration a little bit? Because that would also explain a little bit lower interest income. On slide 31, I saw that the investments below 1 year went from 25% at the end of last year to 11% at the end of H1. So it seems that you increased your duration a little bit. The longer rates were lower, of course, so that might have also some effect on this interest income, but could you also give some comments on that that part? And then more strategically, the last couple of years, we have seen that Volksbank has been losing some market share in savings accounts from 11% a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, to around 9.4% now. The new CEO management, what's your view on that? Are you fine that continues to decline, or might you take some actions to continue? I think Volksbank is one of the few that charges a fee for a savings account. I think at most other banks you can just open a savings account without any fee. And I think Monash savers are also quite profitable nowadays in the current interest environment. Could you give your view strategically on your position in the savings market going forward? So that's a question. And maybe the last question is on the ROE target. You increase your ROE target somewhat. Is that only due to higher interest rates, or is there also something else related to that? That were my questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Cor. Let me just walk through your questions and let's see that I can cover all of them. So the first one was related to the interest income and the net interest margin there. So as already stated, it's a decline of 15% year over year, or in euros, it's 98 million. And if you look at the page 14, you also see there the development of the margin itself to 158 basis points. So you asked for clarification, what is the composition of this one? There are actually four main drivers, actually, if you look at the composition itself. One is, like you explained yourself, that is the shift between NII from interest income to the other result on financial instruments, which I also explained earlier in the call. That is roughly one quarter of that deviation year over year. Another quarter is related to declining contribution of retail savings deposits because of the pass-through rate towards customers. That is what we have seen last year towards much higher, smaller rates, and now in competition, actually, we increased that, we adjust that, but it results into a lower interest income contribution year over year. And the other two quarters for the decline overall is related to our ALM treasury activities, where we have also a hedging instruments and cost in money market business, where less contribution was there, because of duration shifts that we also discussed. Yeah, and then the other question was close related to that one. We have answered it yourself with the duration. Yes, we have actually shortened the duration temporary there. That is also resulting into lower interest and income for a moment and might change depending on how the outlook develops further. Your third question was related to the market share for savings there. I think that we are now quite stable the last 2 years with that slightly above 9%. Yes, historically we had a bit of a higher one. That is through the cycle always changing. We have strong ambitions to be a savings collector and be present in that market. So to further decrease the share is not the intention. To increase is always related towards our ambition on the asset side. As you know, that we are a very simple bank. We have on the asset side mortgages and the liability side, we're funding it via retail savings. And we need to align that the growth of both lines actually has the same pace. And that was especially during the negative interest period. Most people forgot that potentially after the hike of interest rates with the ECB over the last 1.5-2 years. But before that, we were persistently in a negative and historically low interest rate environment for 7 to 8 years. There also excess liquidity had to be parked and was negatively charged by the central banks. And that was actually the moment where the banks had to shift, also the Volksbank, to see that we reduce this negative damage. And since then, we are doing this very consciously, that we look out for our forecast to grow on the asset side, which is driving our demand also for deposits on the liability side there as well. But we would like to grow going forward, as long as the market also allows that. So I think that's hopefully very clear. Then the fourth one is related to the return on equity. Yes, well spotted. We had to adjust. We had earlier always in our 8% target, which came actually from the strategy set up in 2020 for the strategy period 2021 to 2025. That was a really different environment in 2020, where return on equity levels of all banks were much lower. And the 8 was at this time already quite challenging for portfolio with repricing. But now with the interest hikes over the last 1.5-2 years and the expectation of forecast going forward, we need to revise. So I think it's good to target in the bucket between 8-10% to develop really a healthy bank, which is on the asset side healthy, but also is able to pay debt coupons on the liability side, which increased over the last 1.5 years, also quite in the market there. So that's the main reason. And I think it's also not an outlier compared to our niche competitors, where we are in good company, and there's even a more competitor in the Netherlands who's even above that one. So it looks like a good adjustment for us. I hope this answers the question.
Yeah, maybe I can add a few things from my side to what Andre said. Indeed, it is true. We have a narrow business model. We know that our main value creator is collecting savings on the liability side and creating assets on the asset side. And this is generally seen or looked upon as something that makes us vulnerable. I believe it has the potential to make us actually pretty agile as well if you organize as well. We can still generate a very effective return. We will continue to develop initiatives that are diversifying our business model, i.e. I'm talking about SME lending, I'm talking about insurances or pension products. This will continue to be on the radar screen, but we shouldn't be kidding ourselves. You know, before this will start to move the needle, you know, we're much further down the road. So our primary objective is to make sure that our most important value creator is going to be as effective as possible. And this goes hand in hand, as Andre was saying, with a growing franchise also in the savings market. But we do this wisely. No? So we do not want to carry on with us an abundance of excess liquidity. So we do carefully monitor that. But clearly, we're not aiming for a standstill. And this is also the link to the ROE target. When we talked about, when I said before, you know, that we're analyzing the possibility of making the organization more effective, we do believe that we can do what we do today in a more agile manner, and not agile in the sense of the organizational model, as we all talk about, but as an organization that is quicker to respond to the demands of both customers and regulators. As we do that, you know, I think the range of 8-10% with our current business model, and in continue to include on the diversification initiatives, but honestly still relying on the savings and mortgage model is well within the range of what we can achieve. Does that answer your question, Cor?
Absolutely. Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you have any questions, please press star 1. And if your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. We'll move now to Shan Bimji, colleague from ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, operator. Hi, Roland. Hi, Andre. Yeah, I'm actually calling in from sell-side research on the credit front. Two questions from my side. I think Cor already asked about the NII development, so that was well answered, also in my view. But two other questions from my side. First, the RWA increase due to the higher exposure to financial institutions. Maybe some color on the driver behind the change and how sticky this is. And then RWA from lending, presumably up by 0.1 billion, but I see that historically you have roughly 20% density on mortgages. So maybe some color on that. And then the second question on the operation risk management flaws, reading that it relates to past processes, does that mean that the current op risk management standards are up to scratch? Plus, how confident are you that the latest CIRA submissions should make the DNB also comfortable about enough remediation being taken in the AML processes? That's it for myself.
Okay, then let me take your first question, and for the third one, I hand over to Roland. The first one was related to the RWAs of 1 billion. Yes, as I stated earlier, the increase was very conscious. So if you look at our capital ratios, total and CET1 ratio are really comfortable, well above our internal planning target, but also above the regulatory minimum requirements. And yes, of course, one opportunity is to have it on the shelf, but it's not working for you. And we live all in an environment where costs are pressuring us, so additional income streams help to cover better costs. That's why we the short-term employment of capital by putting it in exposures to financial institutions, so really well-known counterparts, very liquid, but short tenors. So half is related to a tenor of 12 months, the other one to 24. So it's not longer, but it will help us for generating on short-term, actually, income streams for P&L support there. That was the main driver, actually, for it. There's no other intention. Then you asked for the RWA density itself. So, yes, the density improved to 90.5% overall there. The reasoning is actually only the credit outlook there. So if you look at the macroeconomic parameters, and we are a mortgage bank, we are mainly driven in our models by GDP growth expectations, house price developments in the Netherlands, the unemployment. All three improved in the first half of this year compared to really last year. Last year was really end of the year and also in the first half year quite boomy with recession fears. And that is really also now changing the outlook right there for the calculations. So our average customer credit quality improved, which is improving the density of RWAs as well there. But there's no other factor behind that has changed the calculation here. I hope this answers your first two, and I hand over for the third one to Roland.
Yes, thank you. Very good question, and let me elaborate a little bit on it so we have clarity on what's going on there. So in 2023, we announced that we received the first a notice from the DNB when it came to the KYC AML shortcomings. That letter was then confirmed earlier this year that they were proceeding on it. As part of that whole process, we had to hand in a so-called CIRA, which is the Systemic Identity Risk Assessment. The deadline for that was August of this year, and so we did. By doing that, do you solve the problem? No, of course not. You know, this is a major milestone on developing a structural solution for what was assessed as shortcomings in those processes. The second letter relates to a number of other elements in the risk management area. So this is obviously all in the past. We're talking about things that happened a number of years ago, starting already a number of years ago. Are we going to be scratched today? No, also not. You know, it's a dynamic set of circumstances. You know, every month there's new sets of requirements that are being published. We come out there, we assess them, and we try to accommodate them. Some work, some don't work. This is not different for us compared to any other bank. One could argue that our challenge is a little bit bigger because we are a systemic relevant bank and the requirements from a regular point of view on banks are identical when they're systemic. So for us to be able to adhere to these requirements is a bit of a, in relative terms, maybe a bigger effort than for others. Having said that, we do want to be a 100% compliant bank, and that is not because the law says so that we have to, but we think that we owe it to ourselves and our customers to be a 100% compliant bank. So is there going to be a day that you say, okay, well, now I'll look at this and everything's on green and we're all, as you said, up to scratch? I'm not sure that any bank can ever claim that. Like I said, because it's a dynamic environment, the solutions that are often applied to it tend to have a short-term, very practical solution, and then it's done, but don't necessarily represent structural solutions, which means that you run the risk that as a next audit, or as they call it, OSI, an on-site inspection, we run into similar points again. We aim to find structural solutions. Sometimes those things take a little bit longer, and sometimes then you get into a squeeze with certain deadlines that are being imposed of us, but we seek then the dialogue with the regulator and make sure that we have an agree on the path forward, so that the regulators are sufficiently confident that we would deliver on the requirements as we move along. So, you know, actually, we are certainly on the KYC AML, we're making serious progress. We have somebody in the board now that is responsible for this topic specifically to address it. It reflects the level of priority that we assign to that file. The second letter is distributed around, you know, so the primary responsibility lies with the CRO because of the topics that are being mentioned in it. But all of these things are a responsibility of the combined board and are on our radar screen with a high priority. Does that answer your question, Chad?
Yeah. So maybe just to conclude, so you are pretty confident, if I read through the lines about, you know, you've been doing enough to make the DNB satisfied with the progress.
So now we're in dialogue with them. I think we have constructive dialogue and we move along in parallel. So we talk about two different things, though. I mean, so when we talk about the AML KYC file,
yeah, exactly.
What is called in Dutch the Poortwachters dossier. Now that is an issue of the national competent authority, which is indeed the DNB. The other file that came is a result of on-site inspections and other research that the ECB has done, and has handed the file over to the DNB to investigate the necessity, from their point of view, for a sanction. Right. So we in this stage, so with respect to the two files, we both deal with the DNB, but the source. And the primary responsibility for the two topics is a little bit different. No? So KYC AML is the NCA, and the risk management file, the second letter that we received is the ECB, but executed by the DNB, if you follow me.
Yeah, got you. Okay, then maybe one final follow-up question. I do see that you have a Tier 2 bond expiring, effectively being callable next year. Any plans on that you could already share with us?
Well, we are not allowed to share this time, but I guess that you can assume that we have high interest of keeping such positions there, but we will internally at first look at the environment and whether there are opportunities how to proceed with that program, and we'll let you know on short notice like the market then.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you very much. Good day.
Thank you for your question, sir. Our next question will be coming from Pierre-Jean Etienne, calling from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, good morning, and thank you for the conference call. One question: you indicate in your outlook that you expect NII to be slightly below in the second half compared to H1. But what about the other results on financial income instruments? As you mentioned, that there was some shift from NII to other financial instruments. What's your expectation? Do you expect some sequential improvement compared to H1 2024 in H2 2024, meaning that there could be a total income showing a lower year-on-year decline in H2 compared to what we've seen in H1? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you a lot for this question. So focusing on the other result on financial instruments, there indeed the trend line there is, if you put that 5 years in a row, difficult in a linear way to compare, because there are, if you look at the composition of each year, they are slightly different. So in this year, it's really mainly related to our hedging instruments there, and hedging instruments, they have curves for valuation, and the tenor what you hedge makes a difference for the price, which is changing year-over-year. There, that is actually this year and also going forward, more or less a driver. In previous period, we had the swaptions actually, in which we don't apply at this moment. We used in the past swaptions as an insurance against the extreme interest hikes. You know that you have, from a prudential perspective, the supervisory outlier test to do, and we can do up to 100 basis points with normal plain vanilla hedging instruments, just make the test. But everything above 100 to the 200, we need other instruments, and that was only done with swaptions there. And you know, before the interest hike started, actually, we had quite a package of swaptions as insurance. It's really not a trading instrument. In our case, it's a hedging, where we just bought the swaption and paid the premium at this time, and then you hope and pray that your insurance premium never need to utilize. But then it came out of the blue, and that we had 200 basis points interest hike in 1 and a half years. And then the swaptions really came in the money in this very moment, which was not any intention on our side, because, again, we used this as insurance product, and that's why you saw that the last 2 years, quite some unrealized gains really went up, and partially we have realized that one. But then the environment stabilized, and we decided with the peak of the interest rates, swaptions is currently not an instrument where we buy another premium, because we don't see a rally that is so sharp that we needed above 200 basis points. So that's why if you put another 3 years in a row, it's unfortunately not comparable. There's different time, different instruments, and you cannot take this for forecast going forward there. I think the level that we currently have in is more reliable than previous periods there. I hope this answers your question a bit.
Okay, thank you. And perhaps just one last question, one follow-up on the RWAs. Understood that the rise in RWAs coming from your exposure to loans and advance to banks was is quite opportunistic in order to optimize income generation. But may we assume that there will be some reversal, perhaps not within the second half, but during next year?
No, so I can confirm that. It's really consideration of if you have your capital position, you look at your capital target. In our case, it's 17% CET1. We are well above this one, close to 20. Also well above our regulatory minimum requirements, then of course we focus on long-term lending growth, because we are a mortgage bank, and we have done really great efforts in the first half of the year with a growth of 1.3 billion, organic-wise, 1 billion of that. But still there's room on capital, and you could wait for further employing it, which is actually our mid- to long-term strategy, because we are a lender, actually lending bank. But on short-term, it's also good to employ the capital for generating P&L support as an income line. And the tenors here are really more to bridge, actually, the employment of capital for having lending growth later. So the tenors are really between 12 months, 50% of this one, and another one is up to 24, which allows us to free up at any time also this capital if there would be stronger growth on the lending side to shift that, because that's our main intention there. It's done with great counterparts in financial institutions, very liquid and short tenors. But you won't see that we increase there rapidly further, because then we have also natural limits in our capital base there. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you much for your questions, Mr. Etienne. As we have no further questions at this time, I'll turn the call back over to Mr. Bocquet for any additional or closing remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much, operator. Thank you all for your attention. Thank you all for your questions. I think, you know, it's pretty clear that we need to do some things in order to position this bank well for where we want to go. Essentially, there's two main targets that we want to accomplish. On the one hand, obviously, we want to be compliant. It's you know, it's a matter of honor to be operating within the boundaries of the law. So it is, there's no doubt about it. And we want to do this quick because it's not comfortable to be where we are. Secondly, we know that our shareholder, through the institution that represents the interest of the shareholder, the NLFI in the Dutch market, has clearly outlined their preference, their preference of the way forward. We have a very constructive dialogue with them, so we are part of the thought developments that are taking place there. We are very appreciative of that, by the way, and we agree with their conclusion. Which means that we focus on a time horizon that is 2 to 3 years for a strategic investor, 5 to 7 years for an IPO. This is their wish. We want to accommodate their wish. But that also means that we need to become a very attractive target for any strategic investor. And so this is what we're trying to do. Also, in that respect, we have a sense of urgency because 2 to 3 years is not that long. So we actively discuss the things, the steps we need to take in order to stay a healthy bank from a commercial point of view. Again, from a prudential point of view, when it comes to capital and liquidity, we are very well positioned. We have very dedicated staff that work in this bank, not only because they need a job and they want a salary, but because they have a driver that goes beyond that, and they like the positioning of the bank and the goals of the bank that go beyond that P&L. This gives us an extra source of energy that we want to work on, that we can mobilize and move forward. Like I said, it would really mean that we really have to fundamentally rethink the way we do our business. We will continue to do what we do today, but we have to really fundamentally think how are we doing it and how can we make sure that we accomplish the two goals at the same time, i.e. be compliant, be much quicker and more impactful when it comes to delivering on the regulator's expectations. And at the same time, how do we make sure that on a short notice and short term, we can deliver on what our owner would like us to do. We have a great starting point, and so we're excited in order to continue the discussion. And when we're done with that in the board, we will, of course, let you know. We do this carefully. We should not forget that even though we are the number four bank in the Netherlands, we are a system relevant bank, but we do have 4,000 people working here. We have 3 million loyal customers, and we have more than 4 billion in capital. So we will do our homework properly. We will make sure we don't endanger anything that we have, but create a solid plan to position us for a prosperous future. So more to come, and we'll keep you informed. For now, I would like to thank you very much for your attention and your time. And, enjoy the weekend. Bye.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's conference. Secretary Tennant, you may now disconnect. We wish you a good day and goodbye.